Welcome to the Watch OK Please podcast, a podcast where three friends try to convince each other to devote what little time they have left to watch more TV and or movies than they've ever wanted to watch. Please join us while we argue about our media cues and waste everyone's valuable time on things that just don't matter.
Hey Watchers, it's Scott, and thank you for joining us on another episode of the Watch OK Please podcast. First up, Nyan and I give Dan our feedback on the Batman adjacent series Pennyworth, which you can watch on HBO Max. Watch out for that Alfred. Next, Scott pitches the puppet-tastic Netflix series The Dark Crystal, Age of Resistance. As always, if you are enjoying or hating any of this podcast, please rate and review us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. You can also hit us up on our Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook pages, as we do monitor those pages. Who knows, you may even get a shout out in a future ep. Finally, feel free to leave us a voicemail with a pitch of a show or movie that you want us to watch on our Anchor page at anchor.fm/watchokplease. All right, Watchers, here we go.
All right, it's Dan, and we're here to talk about Pennyworth. Originally aired on Epix, now on HBO Max. And it, of course, is a DC property telling the story of one Alfred Pennyworth, who later becomes the butler of one Bruce Wayne, a.k.a. Batman. And one thing I do want to mention right now is that just recently just popped this month is that there actually will be a season three of Pennyworth that's slated to premiere late in 2022, though exact date has not been announced, but it already began filming in Richmond Park in London, according to research coming from Parade. So we'll see if they're still keeping their street cred or not. But I
Parade
need to know, guys,
magazine.
Yeah, yeah. Again, it's all rumor until I see it announced from, you know, the rumor is that they were going to announce it at a DC fandom originally, but it didn't happen. So we'll have to see what happens.
Wow.
But anyway, so what'd you think?
I had no idea that Alfred was such a badass.
Yeah.
That's my overall comment. Like, wow.
Again, SAS, you know, members are no joke.
Yes, that I understand. And he really, I love how he said he didn't want to be violent and then ends up kicking so many people's butts in the episodes that we watched.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had a vague inkling just based on, like, you know, the random comics I read. But yeah, to Scott's point, like, he killed it. Like, I was just very impressed with how violent that dude is. I was here for it. I think I might have a man crush on Alfred. I'll be honest. That just kept thinking, like, he's channeling Michael Caine.
Yes, yes.
And then again, half the dudes in here are Michael Caine in the Ipcrest file. Let's be real. There were a bunch of guys I was like, are you Michael Caine? Are you Michael Caine? And that's probably the point. But yeah, I totally here for Alfred. He's, definite man crush right now.
Mm-hmm. That's what I started watching it, because I'm like, oh, because when it came out, remember, it came out, you know, in late 2019 originally. And so it was right before pre-pandemic. I'm like, oh, I should totally watch it when it drops, but I don't have Epix. I'll figure it out at some point. And then I forgot about it because, you know, obviously life happens and everything like that. And then boom, you know, then all of a sudden, you know, when I finally came back to it, I'm like, wow, why did I sleep on this?
And it was an interesting as alternate version of the UK post-war. Because at first I was like, oh, this is going to be set like in post-World War II Europe. And then it like went off in a different direction to seem like it was parallel universe, maybe.
Yeah, I was thrown by that too. I kind of just made the assumption it might be parallel universe. But Scott, I had the same thought process as you in that I was like, I thought this was going to be kind of straightforward. But then there are definitely just elements where I was like, this is clearly somewhere else. I mean, that said, the production design wise, I really enjoyed it. Like that the way they did the alleyway for the bar that Alfred works at in the beginning, like that whole street, I was like, wow, this is just really cool production design. And that seemed to definitely follow all the way through, like at least the first episode and into the second as well. I was kind of, I mean, just even from the beginning when they started off with painted black, like right away, I was like, am I watching China Beach? Is this a 90s on ABC? I don't know if anyone remembers China Peach. I vaguely remember it. But yeah, just that intensity right away. And the production design on top of it, I was in love. Mm. This is great.
That blonde woman is really creepy.
Oh my God, yeah.
Yeah.
Super creepy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, is like all these characters that get introduced, they all have different tells or different kinds of aspects of their character that definitely stick out. But yes, I mean, Bette is definitely out there. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. It took me a minute to figure out the connection, but I guess Thomas Wayne is Bruce's father. Is that right?
Correct. Correct.
Okay. So that was Alfred's first entryway into knowing the Wayne family, as they showed in the show.
Right. So yeah, so obviously, like I said, this is all about building, eventually bridging the gap towards, well, how did he become to be in the Wayne household? Yeah.
Right, right. Okay.
One of the things that's pulling me along is I'm curious to see how that develops, because I remember Thomas Wayne being a doctor, not a forensic accountant. So right. This yeah. is confused. And I'm just curious to see like how this gets tied. It's got to be tied up in some way, because that doctor thing is very much canon.
Again, if you do keep on, they do make a reference at some point when things move forward that he may switch career paths at some point.
Got it. Okay.
So it definitely isn't lost on Bruno Heller for sure. You know, he understands what has happened or transpired in the various different pre-New 52 comics, etc. He understands all these kind of things, but he wants to be somewhat true to the character, but he doesn't necessarily need to be true to one specific comic run versus another one. He wants what's going to tell a good story, and like I said, I think he wants to bridge that gap that he created in Gotham with what happens in Pennyworth.
Ah, got it. Maybe I should have watched Gotham before I watched this.
Well, no, I strongly believe that. I think that this is, watching it chronologically, I think is better. I think, because again, I watched all Gotham first, literally all six seasons, before I started this, and I kind of almost wish I got to see it chronologically, because like, I don't know, my mind like just processed these things a little bit better and whatnot. So in that regard, but I think that, you know, yeah, you could gain also from watching Gotham first, depending upon if you're able to mentally compartmentalize that or not. But that's a good question, though. I'd love to know if listeners out there, if you've watched one or another first, if what your thoughts are.
And Pennyworth does come first chronologically, right?
Correct.
Okay.
I have to ask, at some point during the series, does someone say, what's it all about, Alfie? Please tell me they do. I need more Michael Caine. I need Michael Caine, the Batman.
Insert phrase, comma, Alfie. That gets said a lot.
Excellent. Thank you.
So it might not be that exact phrase, but there are various different phrases that are said with comma Alfie at the end of them.
And I don't think they're getting too cheeky in terms of their random references, but the random card that said Batley's Electrical, I mean, yep. Kate called that one out,
yep.
And was like, I felt like a Batman reference.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, there's little drops here and there that remind you that you're still in the DC universe in that regard. But again, there is a lot in here because this is like pre actual Batman. It's like, this is a different story for sure.
And I do have to say, props to Alfred's parents. They really stepped it up when those guys tried to come into their home and they just beat the crap out of them. Mm-hmm.
Again, I think it's part of the nature of the time period, I think, to a certain degree, where I think that, you know, people were more hard in that regard. And I think, but part of it is also just, you know, who these people are. And I think that because you see a progression with both Mary and Arthur over the course of the first season for sure, and even to a certain extent beyond that, it's very interesting to see how their characters, you know, kind of continue on with that kind of mental fortitude, if you will.
Yeah, I guess that's where Alfred gets his toughness from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm kind of curious to see how the things evolve and if they can keep up or how characters develop or if it stays consistent. Because I could see Esme's character just continually, if they kept the same thread with her and she was just constantly traumatized and it became very one note, it could be potentially just a less interesting storyline. But if there is an evolution there and that carries through with not just her, but the other characters, this could be an excellent series. And it feels like they're doing a really good job so far. So I hope that that's something that is consistently carried through the series, that it's well thought out, it's well written, and the characters develop and they don't become caricatures.
Right. I think this is the, whenever you are coming into, you're playing in someone else's universe or their playground, if you will, this is a definite worry across the board. Because if you're saying something, I'm doing something in the DC universe or the Marvel universe, or, you know, if you're going into one of the other major IPs out there, be it Star Wars, Star Trek, Stargate, Lord of the Rings, etc., there's always a worry of like, you know, well, am I doing something that's, you know, correct within the universe? Am I doing justice to the characters that I'm introducing or reintroducing? Or if they're new characters, am I functionally going to fit within the larger canon or chronology that exists here? There's a lot of puzzle pieces, a lot of different kind of plates to be spinning at the same time, for sure.
Fair enough. I think the one thing that kind of caught me, at least at the end of the first episode, was I thought it was all going really well. It was really interesting and very compelling until that last moment where there's a character shouting, "I'll be back." And I was just like, I don't, this just feels dumb. I don't know why. Like that just random note just really caught me. And I was like, this just feels very silly.
Right. Well, I'm trying to remember like which character said off the top of my head. There are some points I think, you know, that are definitely, I'd say, comic exaggerated to a certain extent. But yeah, I can definitely understand how that you could see that differently.
That said, going into the second episode, picked it right up, and I thought it followed through pretty well.
Nyan, I had a similar thought, but about a scene towards the end of the second episode where he falls into the trap door or falls through the trap door,
right,
in that little holding area. I didn't quite understand what that was about, and then he just seems like he's fine after that.
Yeah, that actually, like, it didn't bother me as much. I can see why it bothered you, but I kind of did hope at some point there would be an explanation as to how he got out of that hole.
Yeah, me too. Okay, good. I'm glad it wasn't just me who was puzzled by that.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. I ended up giving up on it and didn't strike me too much later. And part of me kind of hopes that, like, there are later episodes that get into it, maybe explain it a little bit more, because I think that's an interesting point. And it's hard. It's a very glaring hole, if you will, to that should be addressed in some way, shape, or form. And I'd imagine maybe they're developing it into something that gets called back to or explained later. I hope.
Dan, can you shed any light on that?
I'm not going to go too far. I won't go too far into it, basically. But again, there are some, for the most part, because this is so much character driven, and the plot kind of follows the characters. I mean, I can't say there's 100% closure on this in that regard, but because I think there are certain, I'd say more so in season two, I would say, than season one, honestly, where there might be some small dangling pieces or hanging chads here or there in that regard. So, but I think that, you know, I think that on the larger scheme of things, the experience will kind of play into the character's development, but it might not necessarily be on a loophole perspective tied up.
Okay.
Fair enough.
All right, fair enough. Yeah. It was intriguing. It was a different, I like seeing a different side of the Batman universe, which was cool. And it's one that I don't think has been, at least not in TV or movie form, hasn't been addressed before, which is good, but not sure it was enough to completely draw me in.
Oh, that's interesting. I'm totally definitely down for watching this even more. I think it's because I'm probably going to put a poster up on my wall of Jack Bannon. It is,
yes.
Jack Bannon, right?
It's Jack Bannon.
I know I have an official man crush on Alfred.
Yeah. Just to be clear, this is Jack and not Race Bannon.
Ah, thank you. Appreciate the clarification. I mean, they're both pretty badass and probably could definitely hold their own in a fight, clearly. So right. I can see where the confusion might come in.
But I feel like Jack is less likely to treat Haji with any degree of, you know, white supremacy.
Yeah, no, that's fair. So yeah, I mean, ultimately, I'm in for this one, and Kate liked it as well. I was surprised she wanted to watch it with me, and when we did watch it, she was a little turned off by the gore.
Yeah,
because there's quite a bit of torture, yeah. Which I can tolerate, but she's not as into that. But I think overall, she actually had an interesting observation in that she enjoyed sort of the individual stories, but maybe not necessarily the whole arc. And that's based on two episodes, so it might, you know, that might change, but that was her initial impression. I kind of got that. I personally was more interested in the way the arc was going and kind of wanted to see how things would shake out, because now in my head I'm thinking Court of Owls, not to spoil anything for anybody, but I'd be very curious to see if that plays in. And yeah, overall, like, we're going to go for it in our household. Nice. Definitely,
yeah,
into it.
Yeah, I think it's very interesting. Hearing your comments about that in a regard. Yeah, on the gore perspective, I like to think that Bruno Heller, he got you all the really more racier elements, I'd say, through this series that he wasn't able to do on a network TV show like Gotham. So I like to think that if you're unfettered or less fettered with storytelling, I think that what are your options here? It's like, this is no different than, asking, okay, well, what's going to happen with characters like Daredevil or the Punisher now that they're wholly owned by Disney/Marvel? Are they going to be able to do them justice a la, what some people feel about the Netflix series, for example? So there's a lot of people that, like to talk about this kind of dichotomy of like the Batman's supposed to be gritty, or, this character or this property is supposed to be like this. And there's a lot of this fan speculation or versus, in canonic or source material interpretation. This happens a lot in Star Wars too, for that matter. And again, this is a constant developing conversation, and everyone has their own opinions, and there's almost always like these like mini factions that are created as a result of this, saying, no, you can't do that because it's not right, or or they're speaking like comic book guy, and they're like, I'm sorry, clearly in issue 57 of this year they clearly didn't do that right, so I'm sorry.
I gotta imagine that the first development meeting went something like Bruno Heller showing up and being like, so where are my limits? And then the executives were like, well, it's Epics. No one's watching, so do whatever you want.
Emotional damage. Yeah. Yeah, no, I appreciate both your takes on that. I really was drawn in by Jack as well. I do appreciate, I think that everyone, I think, draws a little something different from the show as it is. And there's so many, the main characters are great. I think the supplemental characters are also equally as interesting in my mind. I liked how they are playing in the Ripper family. That definitely, was an interesting thing that I saw. So, yeah. And I was like, that sounds interesting. Yeah, there's a lot of cool things and cool Easter eggs and all those things that happens there. But again, I think everyone might come across it differently. This didn't really get a lot of nationwide or even worldwide acclaim to a degree, but it is getting a third season. So there is enough of a fan base out there. I think that it's still going to keep along. And I'm hoping that season three, really brings the heat here and whatnot.
I wouldn't be surprised if it gets a bump being on HBO Max because of the way they're pumping DC fair properties.
Yeah, fair play.
is there a 900 number like they had in the early or the late 80s, early 90s, where you could call in it to heartthrobs and hear voicemails? Because I would do that for Jack Bannon.
Yeah, they 100% had that. They had recorded messages from Luke Perry, Jason Priestley, 100%.
Yeah, do they have that for Jack Bannon? Because I'd like that number, please.
No, I would. Yeah, if I could, I'm sorry, Siri, but if I could have Jack Bannon be my Siri, it's over. Yeah.
Oh my God, the movies! I just changed Siri to have an Australian accent, and it's working for me. But there, if they get Jack Bannon, I'll go there.
Well, I feel like you have if you have one of those older GPSs, like the TomToms or the Garmins, you actually can load your own profiles on there. So if you had one of those, I'd say that'd be cool. You could just load you could just get a whole bunch of random clips and whatnot and do that.
Yeah.
And looking on IMDb, I realized that the actress who played Esme would go on to play Princess Di in The Crown.
Oh, that's right. Yes, that's right. It's a good catch. I mean, it's kind of funny because there is a little bit of The Crown that does get involved in the series later. So it's going to be, you'll see a bit of that if you do continue.
Ah, well, Queen Elizabeth made a cameo or whatever this universe's version of Queen Elizabeth is.
Yes, yes. Yeah, but yeah, she does pop in here and there throughout the series. So,
all right.
But yeah, so I'm glad you guys had a chance to check that out. And like I said, we'll see you for the next one. And cheers, yeah.
Cheers.
All right. This is Scott, and I'm here with my next pitch. So I wanted to ask Dan and Nyan, what are your thoughts on media where all of the characters on screen are puppets?
Like Fraggle Rock?
Yeah, to a certain extent, yes.
So is this where I start screaming, you know, Muppet sex like in Avenue Q?
Oh yeah, Avenue Q was amazing, but that there were people on.
Right. I like to think of it as Muppet sex, though.
I think that's fair. Yeah, no, that makes sense.
You can certainly bring that into it, but yeah. So if you are fans of that or have seen other puppet focused media, of course, the Muppets is the one that comes to mind primarily, then I think you will enjoy this show, which is The Dark Crystal: Age of Resistance. Ooh. This is also a Jim Henson property. He created a movie in the early 80s called The Dark Crystal. And this is a TV series that was on Netflix 2019, I believe, is when it debuted. And it acts as a prequel to the storyline from the movie. So I did not actually see the movie. So this was my first introduction to this world.
Oh, interesting.
But yeah, it's really, it's a fascinating, it's a really well done fantasy story. And from what I have read about it, Jim Henson, in addition, of course, to doing The Muppets and Sesame Street, was very much into kind of fantasies and fables and liked stories such as The Lord of the Rings, which created this whole alternate world and wanted to do a project like that. So that led him to create the different puppets and the stories for The Dark Crystal.
I feel like The Dark Crystal, I mean, again, I don't know much about that fandom, honestly, but I feel like that it's kind of very cult oriented.
Yes. You
know, is that a fair assumption?
Absolutely, yes. From what I've read or seen people talk about, the movie has definitely a very strong and devoted cult following.
Hmm. Yeah, never actually saw the movie. Will I get lost? Well, you said you hadn't seen the movie before, so
yeah,
it's a prequel. So this, yeah. If nothing else, you're just kind of setting yourself up to watch the movie, I guess, right?
Yeah, exactly. And yes, I would like to watch the movie at some point, but you will understand, I think, most of the story from the first episode. And there is a narrative part in the very beginning, which sets up the entire world in which this story takes place and provides some background and is very nicely narrated by Sigourney Weaver.
Ooh.
Yeah. Which is cool. And the voice cast for this show is really amazing. I'll get to that in a minute. But okay, basically, Weaver. What's that?
Oh, sorry. You said Sigourney Weaver, and I just thought of UHF. Okay, Weaver.
Okay, Weaver. Well, it's funny because I was going to say we can get her a guest shot of Wildwater Kingdom.
There you go.
And actually, because Sigourney Weaver was in Avatar, there is, I feel like, a connection between that movie and this story because I think they have a lot of similar themes.
Interesting.
But to just do a very brief overview, the story takes place on this planet called Thra. And Thra has a number of different species and animals and plants that live there. And of course, everything was in perfect harmony with nature and the creatures that live there and all that. And of course, all the creatures are puppets. There is not a single human being that is on screen during the entire series. All of the characters are puppets. And there are some CGI elements in the show in various points, but a lot of it is, they kind of really went old school with this and used just old fashioned sets for a lot of the scenes.
Wow.
As Jim Henson did back in the day, which is kind of cool.
Practical over CGI is interesting.
Yeah, exactly. And if you guys are so interested, and I did this after I watched the series, there is also a documentary about the making of the show, which is also on Netflix.
There you go.
Which goes into some of the background about how they actually went about making this series. So anyway, so the planet is Thra, and then everything's all hunky-dory for a long, long, long time. And then these aliens come to the planet and declare themselves the rulers of everyone and start draining the planet of its energy and draining the life force out of the creatures in order to extend their own lives.
Commentary on imperialism? Check.
Yeah, I was going to say very much apropos to what's happening out in the world, unfortunately.
Yes.
But yeah. But, and of course, they hide it from the creatures who live there, who think that they're great and benevolent rulers who kind of protect them and make sure that Thra continues to prosper and like they always have, you know, food to eat and plants grow and all that stuff. But they don't know what's going on behind the scenes. So, of course, the name of the series is Age of Resistance. So that gives you some clue as to what happens later on. But basically, through different events, the creatures start to realize what's really going on and that the aliens are really bad. And then they try to overthrow them, basically. And that's the overarching plot of the series. And it focuses on in a few different storylines. So it does jump around a little bit between different groups of puppets. But in the end, everything comes together. So in terms of recommending this to you guys, I just really think it's a cool world that they've created. The fact, of course, that it's all puppets is very different from other things that we've seen. Despite the fact that it is puppets, there's a lot of really adult or kind of more mature, I guess you could say, elements of it. And it does get actually quite violent at times, which is not something I was quite expecting. And so they also
puppet sex is puppet violence. Okay, noted.
Yes, no puppet sex, but there is definitely puppet violence. And they even use quite a few words that just that the characters say that I had to look up in the dictionary because I did not know what they meant.
Wow.
So, yeah. So that's the main the can, just can kind I of an overview you? Of the so, Dark Crystal.
It's the Age of Resistance. So I have to say, yeah. is this at any point going to be like Puppet Les Miserables, like, do you hear the puppet sing? You know,
that would have fit right in, actually. Sadly, that they did not go that route. Although there are some songs throughout the series.
Oh, interesting. So, there is the musicality that I think that that Jim brought to, obviously Kermit 100% of the time. You know, and that's interesting that continues again. Well after his death, unfortunately, through everything. I mean, would you say that it honors kind of his legacy in that regard?
Absolutely, yes. And the Henson Company, which is now run, I think, by his children and his widow, I believe, is involved too. They were, they produced the show.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. They were. I didn't know they were fully on that. That's interesting.
Yes. Yes. So they definitely carry on the Henson legacy for sure. And yeah, so it is an interesting use of music in the show because unlike the Muppets, which especially like in the movies are almost like musicals, in this, the music is just woven into the storylines. Like the characters will sing these hymns that their people have like passed down through generations. So it also there's a lot of references or allusions to people of different races, different ethnicities. One of the main groups of creatures are called the Gelflings, but there are different tribes, and sometimes they really hate the tribes don't get along and they discriminate against each other. But in the end, of course, they have to work together if they're going to beat the bad guys. So a lot of different elements here that I think are something you might not expect from a show that is entirely puppets.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like to me that they're trying to, insert various different pieces of societal and other related questions and issues that exist in the greater world, but putting it into, I guess, a story that is perhaps a little bit, I'm not saying it's less complicated per se, but it's definitely more accessible, I guess, with the word I'd be looking for, to understand and kind of look at things in that perspective. I'm curious if there's any one element. I'm definitely, I grew up in Fraggle Rock, like Nyan mentioned as well. And so I think that I'm definitely going to have, I think it sounds like to me, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, I might have a little bit of a nostalgia feel coming from this for real. But I mean, is there anything else that you think that stands out to, either of us particularly besides that nostalgia play?
Well, that certainly, I think, will be involved for sure, especially if you watch The Muppets growing up or Fraggle Rock. So I think that will certainly be a reason I think you would enjoy the show. But also, I just think it's very unexpectedly good. It's just a really interesting and engrossing show, and the different stories, too, how they start out to be pretty separated and then how they come together towards the end of the season.
The writing's on point. That's interesting.
Yeah, and I think you will like the voice cast as well. Just to name a few of the voice actors, Taron Egerton is one of the main characters. Anya Taylor-Joy.
Sorry.
Exactly. Anya Taylor-Joy, who is in Queen's Gambit.
Queen's Gambit, yeah.
Yep. Helena Bonham Carter, Simon Pegg, Mark Hamill.
Ooh, okay. I'm sold.
Right? Is a voice actor.
Hamill fanboy here, yes. So.
Yep. Keegan-Michael Key. Awkwafina, for some reason, Natalie Dormer, who's in Game of Thrones, among other things. And of course, because this is like a fantasy show, everyone speaks with a British accent because apparently that's just how these things work for some reason. Andy Samberg, I didn't even realize he was one of the voices. And let's see, who else? Alicia Vikander, who's been in a bunch of stuff.
Oh, yeah, of course. She was the most recent Lara Croft.
Yeah, Eddie Izzard. So it's just amazing.
Eddie Izzard in this. Wow. They definitely put some of the stops here for some of these people.
Yeah, they really got top-notch voice cast. So, and in terms of the episodes, so the first episode, I think, is pretty much required viewing because it sets everything up. So I will recommend that. It's called End Begin All the Same, episode one. But then I think it would be interesting to skip one and then go to episode three, which moves the story along a little bit more. And I think brings some other elements into the show, which will make it more appealing. And that's episode three, What Was Sundered and Undone. So episodes one and three is whatever.
So was there anything about the show? Because you kind of described it generally as why anyone might be interested in this. But is there something that you thought that either based on what you know about Dan or me, that you thought one of us would specifically be interested in this? Or is it just kind of generally you liked it and thought that it's something we should watch?
Yeah, I think it's more of that. But for Dan, probably I know that he likes a lot of these types of fantasy adventure stories. Nyan, I assume that you watched and hopefully liked The Muppets and Fraggle Rock when you were a kid.
Okay.
Yeah.
I guess. I mean, I haven't watched. I know the Muppet movie came out or the most recent Muppet movie came out. I didn't actually watch it, but.
But are you a Jason Segel fan is the question.
He's great. I just never got around to it. It's not right. A big draw for me at this point. I mean, definitely, if it was an Avenue Q type of puppet show, then I'm definitely into it. But
so if a character named Gary Coleman was in it, you'd be more willing to watch it.
Yes, more likely. But I mean, I got to watch it. So we'll go from there.
Okay. So yeah, it's a good show. So give it a try.
But yeah. So I'm thinking. Like I said, I again, The Dark Crystal has. Again, I always perceive it to be this like kind of mystic cult appeal. So I'll have to see how, you know, this plays out. And like I said, it sounds like that Jim Henson's being done well here. If in any way I felt like it was disingenuous, like, you know, then it would be an automatic hate block for sure, I think. Yeah, let's give it a shot.
All right. And we'll be interested to hear what you guys think after watching those two episodes.
Well, that happened, folks, which brings us to the end of another episode of the Watch OK Please podcast. We hope you had a good time listening to us spout more nonsense today, and hope you join us next week for another exercise in utility. In the meantime, please rate and review us on either Apple Podcasts or Spotify, or just tell a friend about us. Until next week, keep on watching.